Okay. You have a...
We had panels right after the visit had started with Bridget. There's, we have some...
All right, you've got, Fullerton Burns, is that correct?
Fulton.
Fulton, I'm sorry.
It's all right, sir.
And James Jacobson and Sandy Meyer. Please identify yourselves for our record and proceed with your testimony.
My name is Fulton Burns. I've spent over 20 years working in the field of corrections, beginning after returning from Vietnam, and worked in the state of Massachusetts and completed it in the state of Oregon. I've worked in pre-release, I worked inside the institutions, and I worked in parole and probation. Currently, I'm the executive director of the Seven Step Foundation, which is a nonprofit that is working with ex-offenders in transition. And for a number of years, we've been working with the Seven Step group inside of Oregon State Prison. As a result of the work that we've been doing with them, the cognitive work, this group of people have gone on to put together on the inside an employment, education, and opportunity and development program, which they themselves run at Oregon State Prison, that enables the people to come out to be prepared for employment before they leave. They put together transition fairs twice a year at Oregon State Penitentiary, in which they bring in other people that would be instrumental in aiding these ex-offenders as they transition out. Even more important is that when I began my career, some of the things that people speak of here about the atrocities that were going on in institutions, the maiming of employees and those kinds of things that were going on, these programs were installed to prevent those because of the fact that they find out when they had outsiders coming in, there became a calmness within the institutions. There was less friction. People on the inside appreciated the contact they had with volunteers coming in from the outside, and this lessened the stress and the strain on them. Security staff could also appreciate the fact of people coming in and the calmness that this brought to the institutions. People have spoken here during the course of the different things that occur or could occur if these programs were curtailed or stopped. For me, in the number of years that I spent in these programs and working with people like Hoyt Cupp and those people who were here at those particular points in time, is that stripping away what was put together to make the Oregon prison system at the time that I was an employee, the best in the world. Visitors from Japan through Oregon OSCI, giving them tours to see what it was like and how we ran these programs. All of these programs were there, and I understand that people became upset about the money that they were spending on institutions. They became upset because of the fact that they were having difficulties getting their kids through college, and we were providing college education for inmates. But and I understand how that occurred, and I also understand that people did not have the ability to sit up and to tell them the truth, is that they were getting these monies back in much, much better ways because we were sending them out better people than the people that came in. I also understand it became, for some people, a way to get elected by being tough on crime. But I also understand that to stop these programs, you've taken away the education. The only thing that you can get from an educational point now is a GED, and only if you're between the ages of 17 and 21. And now you're going to cut back on for them being able to go out and get fresh air. You're going to cut back on them from people on the outside, like these people behind me, come in and volunteer their time and effort away from them. And so what is left? I mean, if you treat a person like an animal, they will respond in kind. Thank you very much.
My name is James Jacobson. I'm a chaplain at Oregon State Penitentiary and have been for the last 21 years. My concern is that we see the people incarcerated as members of a community. The Department of Corrections is composed of a number of communities. Like any other community, they have all the normal, ordinary things that all of us are used to. Home, workplace, hospital, laundry, recreational area, and school. However, the Department of Corrections is unique in two ways. There are those who will leave these communities only when the state tells them that they may leave. Then there are those who will never leave these communities. Most of the discussion has centered on those who will one day leave the Department of Correction. I think we have to consider both. The outside community decided several years ago that the incarcerated would have to work 40 hours a week or otherwise be required to be in vocational training or be getting an education just like people in the outside community. And I am certainly in agreement with that, as are many of the inmates. But those who will be getting out and those who will not, well, both those who will be getting out and those who will not, those who will be getting out wish to prepare themselves to take their places in the larger workforce. For those who are staying, it helps them in several ways: to establish a regular pattern in their lives, to earn meritorious pay, and to feel satisfaction about what they are able to accomplish. There are also the recreational programs, these under the supervision of the Activities Department. They include many of the activities that you and I enjoy, including belonging to clubs, putting on events that raise money for a number of causes, events that include members of the larger community, such as softball and basketball tournaments, and events for the entertainment of the incarcerated. Having these programs helps the incarcerated to live as normal a life as possible in such a confined community. For those temporarily in this smaller community, it helps to prepare them to one day return to their home communities. For the lifers, living a normal life as possible is really important for the safety of inmates and staff alike. When changes come to these closed communities, they are as upsetting as we are upset when things we take for granted are cut off from us. I am thinking of the power shortage, which will affect all of us. When recreation areas may be closed this summer because of low water tables and subsequent fire hazards, it is upsetting. But you and I can change our plans, substitute other areas of recreation, and lessen the impact. The incarcerated cannot. To them, it looks as though one more thing is being taken away from them with nothing to take its place. No activity to make them feel better about themselves, that helps them learn to find normal, legal ways to recreate. There are inmates who are convinced by the system that getting an education would help them to turn away from a life of crime. It would help them stay in the larger community when the state said they could go home. Many were taking advantage of it. Then someone decided that the Pell Grant money should go to more deserving persons, so it was closed to inmates. The reaction of inmates was that the attempt to better themselves was really not that important to the larger community. Now the discussion is about closing the activity section of Department of Correction institutions to transfer the activities personnel to more important positions. The inmates' view of this is that the cultural, moral, educational activities are given lip service. But will be dissolved because they are getting too many privileges, or that the money will be better spent on some other plan. This is frustrating to the temporary wards of the department. It is devastating to those who will spend the rest of their lives behind bars. In both cases, the resultant anger and frustration will make these communities more dangerous. Their incentives to work hard, to hone their skills, like working on racing cars, to feel a sense of community by running a marathon for some cause that benefits children who are not their own. For example, the Make-A-Wish campaign. Or to enjoy sharing their skills, whether as musicians, boxers, or organizers of games for those inmates, senior citizens, is seen as completely irrelevant to basic rehabilitation. Can other people fill in to keep some of these programs going? Can volunteers be of help? Certainly, and have been. But those volunteers and others are not there every day to meet with the inmates, helping them to work through the administrative problems to put on their programs, talking with them about the interpersonal relationships that are so important to people who have used physical force, manipulation, and fraud to solve their problems in the past. These are some of the reasons why a stable staff of activities personnel is so important to the men and women in these closed communities. You and I can adjust when changes interfere with our plans to better ourselves or to make our lives more livable, even though it can be upsetting. It is so much more upsetting to men and women for whom there are few or no alternatives. Thank you.
Thank you.
I am Sandy Meyer, a citizen volunteer with Citizens United for Rehabilitation of Errants, known as CURE. As a former corrections employee and a volunteer with criminal justice issues for over 10 years, I know a truth that screams to be heard, a truth ringing so loudly I'm surprised we're not all deaf. The longer sentences and harsher punishments are not providing public safety. Connections and relationships are. I'm here to prevent Oregon from following in the footsteps of California, where locking up its citizens has become its most productive activity. When I left the California Department of Corrections in 1976, there were 10,000 inmates in that system. 14 years later, 138,000, and today over 238,000. During a return to California in 87, I witnessed the metamorphosis that had taken place since I had left 10 years earlier. Now, there was no pretense of rehabilitation, no awareness that the masses of human beings coming through the revolving doors of California's prisons didn't have to be there, and the crimes they've committed didn't have to happen. Gone was creativity, compassion, and effectiveness. Those isolated and antisocial became even more so under the unimaginative, cruel, and unusual punishment of isolation and boredom. Seldom are these pressure cooker prisons not in lockdown status, as the tortured, futile attempt to feel human is played out in the only activity available, violence. Eventually, in bigger and badder waves, these souls are unleashed on the streets of our communities in far worse shape than when they came in. This is unconscionable. It's irresponsible. I don't want to go there. I witnessed an inmate in California transfer to Oregon. Oregon had programs, activities, outside contacts. The very first thing I noticed was a sudden awareness of his own responsibility. The next thing to go was his in-your-face macho stance. The resistance taken away, he had no choice but to start looking inward at his own behavior, no longer justified by an oppressive system where the best of us would cave to our worst tendencies. Isn't this, after all, our fundamental purpose in corrections, to correct? I hope that you, our community leaders, will continue to provide pro-social activities for the inmates in Oregon, not because I'm soft on crime, but because I'm very tough on crime. I'm absolutely adamant about something happening in prison to return these lost citizens to the streets with a prayer of living a normal life. Please don't go further from this goal as California has. I beg you to continue doing what works. One of the reasons I live in Oregon is because the community gets involved. Why not inform your citizens, empower them, and use them to be part of the solution? Activities in prison is one of the best things you can do to let us help you, and in so doing, further the goal of public safety in the best interest of every single citizen of Oregon. Please don't fix it. It isn't broken. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there questions? Thank you all very much for your testimony. I'd like to call David Poole, Ron Hansen, Gary Lewis, please. Excuse me?
No, actually, we'll defer until tomorrow when we come back.
Thank you, Brian. Please identify yourselves for our record and proceed with your testimony. In any order you choose.
Hello, my name is David Poole. I'd like to read you something first. The future belongs to those who believe in the beauty of their dreams. This is by Eleanor Roosevelt. Thank you very much, Senator Brown. This is a letter that I received from Senator Brown when I won the Oregon Scholarship Commission Scholarship for Community Colleges. I would like to thank you, legislators, for seeing us today. I would also like to thank you for serving the state and focusing on the difficult problems such as the one we are talking about today. Now, I would ask you to consider for just a second the concept of hope. And if you can, think about living without any hope and in a horrible situation, meaning no matter what you did, you were stuck. Your life could not change. You had no hope. 9 years ago, that was my predicament. This here is a certificate that I received while I was in OSP. This here is a certificate that I received at Columbia River for completing programs there. On October 16th, I walked out of the 30-foot walls of the Oregon State Penitentiary. I had two things that I wanted to do. I wanted to stay off the hard drugs that I had been addicted to for almost 20 years, and the other thing I wanted to do was get an education. After being released, I went to Portland on a special pass as I was released here in Marion County. I wanted to get into the Veterans Administration Drug and Alcohol Program in Vancouver, Washington, but I had to wait for bed space. I lived on the streets of Portland, something that was not new to me. I lived on and off the streets for over 10 years, never without drugs. I was able to stay clean and close to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous by going to as many as 4 meetings a day. Finally, I got bed space in a temporary facility after 45 days and then got into the veterans program 2 months later. I stayed in treatment for almost 2.5 years of one kind or another. And on May 9th of this year, I will celebrate 6 years of continuous sobriety. Inside the walls was really the first time that I have ever been clean since I was 13 years old. Some of the fog of heavy drug use cleared and I began to read. I took a college class from Chemeketa College while inside called Life Skills. I enjoyed that very much. After her release, I was sent back to the penitentiary for another drug possession charge. At that time, I was sent to Columbia River Correctional Facility, and through a grant written by Portland Community College, I took a class called Framework for Recovery. Later during that sentence, I took my first classes at Portland Community College, a decimals and fractions class. The teacher of that class, Judy Garvin, told me that I could go to college. She said all I would need to do is try and that anything was possible. I could not remember the last time someone had said that to me. I'm not sure that I believed her, but later I did try. During the class at CRCI, I began to write poems. Then I began to want to write better. I then realized that I would have to learn to write better. From that developed a hunger to learn. Dostoevsky said, I write, I want to write everything. My mantra could easily be, I learn, I want to learn everything. When I began at PCC, I didn't know how to write a complete sentence, and I was at an eighth grade level in math. I didn't know what the parts of a sentence were, and I didn't know what an essay was or how to formulate a paper. That was about 3 years ago. There are many things that I still don't know, but last June I completed my Associates of Arts Oregon Transfer degree, and I picked up two other associates degree, one in General Studies and another in Science. I was the commencement speaker at the 2000 graduation for Portland Community College. In front of 6,000 people, I spoke of my hope of the future and the importance of the education and the importance of education and its relationship with rehabilitation in reducing the prison populations in this country. I was the vice president of the Honor Society at PCC Phi Theta Kappa. I was a member of student government. As president and founder of the Computer Club, I developed a program that to date has donated 40 computers that the Computer Club has taken in as donations, then refurbished and given to financial aid students. This program continues today. I was the recipient of the Governor's Oregon Community College Scholar Award at PCC. I am also an Oregon Student Assistance Commission Ford Scholarship recipient, and I am currently currently in finals at my first, finishing my first term at Reed College. While at PCC, I received both the Foundation PCC Foundation Scholarship and the Dr. Bionardi Scholarship for Academic Achievement and sent to Washington, D.C. as a student government representative to meet the Oregon representatives in the U.S. Congress and to speak on the need and necessity for the amounts and the increasing amount of student financial aid and to ask for money concerning child care for students. My life is totally different today from anything I dreamed it could be. 6 years ago, I only had a glimmer of hope that was given to me by a prison program. I was lost in the world of drugs and the penal system, a world that really has no hope. The light of learning shined on me, and it was what I needed to see how wrong my life had been. I am changing that life. Today, my life is about hope and determination and about the possibilities that are born out of education. More importantly, I have been given an understanding of what all this means, even to a life that I almost gave away. I actually have accomplishments that I'm proud of today and have spent my life trying to make up to society for the wrongs that I created. It is my goal to go to law school and spend the rest of my life helping people. I am currently active in AA as a group service rep for the meeting that I attend. 3 years ago, I started going back to the treatment center that I spent a year in and have turned cooking Christmas dinner for them into an annual service project for the chapter of Phi Theta Kappa at PCC. This is far more than I thought could ever come out of my life. I have dreams and hopes today and know if I continue to work and change and grow, anything is possible. This I learned from Framework for Recovery while incarcerated at CRCI. Hope is a wonderful gift. It is a gift that was given to me by the programs that I went through when I was incarcerated. The members of this community have the opportunity to make sure that this gift is still available to those still incarcerated. I can only hope that all of you know how important these programs really are and what they could mean to someone's life, someone like me. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you. Good job.
Like I said at the beginning of this meeting, we appreciate the opportunity to hear from citizens, not that folks we get with the more formal presentations aren't also interesting and informative, but these are the kinds of success stories that give us all pride, and certainly commend you for what you've done with your life.
Thank you.
My name is Ron Hansen. January 23rd of 1988, I killed three people when I drove a driving crash. Listening to him made me emotional. I was incarcerated from April 4th, 1988 to March 20th, 1996. During my incarceration, the activities programs at the Oregon State Penitentiary had a great impact on turning my life in a positive direction. I remember walking into the Oregon State Penitentiary and into my cell and thinking when I got out of prison, what I wanted to do was go to Las Vegas. I never made it there. Since my release, I have spoken at over 100 Clackamas and Multnomah County DUII victims impact panels and high school DUII crash reenactments. When I got out of prison, I went to work at McDonald's for a minimum wage. I ended up getting that job through a 7-step program and a sponsor in there. I was going to take a ride to Gresham, 200 hours from camp, or 2 hours from Canby, forth and back on the bus. But he found me a McDonald's in Canby and vouched for me. When I left that job after working 16 months, the owner, Mindy Smith, said that if I knew of any other people getting out of prison that needed a job, to let her know. After that 16 months, I started working as an alcohol and drug counselor in Southeast Portland, a position I have now held for 44 months. Also, when I was in prison in that Skills of Communication program that's part of 7 Steps, I was encouraged to read a book called Profiles in Courage by John F. Kennedy. I hope that you're familiar with that book, because where you stand and how you vote on the legislating effect of inmates' activities will define who you are as a person. If you are making a conscious vote, what will be influencing your decision? Will it be from a tough-on-crime band-aid approach of lock them up and then let them return to our community still wounded and bleeding when their time is served, or from those truly tough-on-crime, wanting those incarcerated to have an opportunity to work on change and accountability so that we can have a better chance of becoming productive members of our communities when we return to them? That is what activities programs are about. I have to believe that if you knew an alcoholic, that you, in your hearts, would want that person to be involved in Alcoholics Anonymous. That's one of the activities programs that they want to cut. I have to believe that if you had a son or daughter or family member in prison, your vote would be for allowing activities programs to continue. I believe that you would want your family member to have every opportunity to come out of prison a better person. It is about it is not about activities as the term implies. It's about change as the results show. About 3 weeks ago, when I went to the other meeting and was asked to speak, I talked to my 14-year-old son Trevor, who is now living with me. He asked, "What are you going for?" And I told him it was to speak to legislators about them wanting to cut activities programs. I'd like to read what he stated to me. "That's stupid. You mean they want to cut things that will help people? So when they get out, they can go back to doing what they used to do. Please, don't cut them."
Thank you.
My name's Gary Lewis. I'm an electronics technician at Tektronix, where I've worked for about 20 years now. Lived in Oregon all my life. I'm also a man who served 2 years or 2 sentences in OSP, and I've been out of the system for about 20 years. As a result of taking advantage of all forms of the rehabilitation that were provided in the 70s, I was a criminal drug addict, and I went to prison twice for burglary, assault, numerous drug charges. First time I went, I was 19, and the second time I was 25. And I was lucky because I went to prison after the riots. And when I went to prison the second time, I used everything you gave me to try to change. I knew I had to change because I knew I was going to go back if I didn't. I looked around and I saw the people who were going out and saying, "I'll never come back here." You know, and that was always the statement to the people who came back. And I used the clubs, they gave me hope, and I went to school and I got an associate's degree in OSP. I took a vocational training course in electronics, and I've been working at Tektronix as a technician for the last 20 years. Everything in prison is intensified, you know, like the gentlemen have said, you know, you're pretty much forced to focus on something, you know, whether it's negative or positive, you're going to focus on something because you're you sober up. And most of the people that were around me were like me. They were mostly substance abusers, young, poor, single, nothing much to lose. And you need to have something to lose. You know, I have a family now, and I have a good job, and I own a couple of houses, and, you know, I do real well now. I also worked for 6 years with criminal addict teenagers, you know, as part of my rehabilitation and with the Morrison Center Breakthrough Program. And they lived in my house. I was a proctor parent. And it was easy for me because they listened to me. I'd been where they were, and they could respect what I was telling them. I showed them my rap sheet, and I could tell them what they were thinking. And it worked real well. I know people think in black and white, you know, you're either good or bad. I think that a lot of us know there's a lot of gray areas. And it's not so much the decisions you make, it's the choices you have around you. And for me, that was real important when I went to prison, you know, because I was young and crazy and I didn't have a lot to lose, you know. And if you take away these programs, you know, there's a common saying in prison, what are you going to do, take away my birthday? You know, and when you take away all the yard privileges and the activities and the good positive things that are vehicles for change, you know, the prison officials that have testified are dead on, you know, from my perspective as an ex-con, you know. So, you know, people can and do change if they have the chance, you know. And I'm here to testify to that, you know, as somebody who's stayed clean and somebody who's stayed crime-free. And who has changed my life, you know, and it's been 20 years. It isn't. I don't think it's going to go away soon. You know. So thanks for listening.
Thank you for coming. Thank you all for your testimony. Are there questions?
Well, I would just say, Mr. Chair, that of the years I've been in the building, this is the most powerful testimony I've heard. So. Excellent case, and I really appreciate all you've done.
Thank you. Remind the witnesses that the House is currently in session, and if these two get taken away from us, it's obviously not because they aren't interested. Maybe sometimes we have a procedure called a call, and they just have to go, which explains, I'm sure, the absence of the others. We will, the Senate is not in until 10:45, but we will end the testimony promptly at 10:30. So we will proceed. Arwin Bird, Mike Nielsen, and if this hopefully this makes sense, Alf Jorgensen. Please identify yourselves for a record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning. My name is Arwin Bird, and I represent an organization of survivors of crime, survivors advocating for an effective system. I'm here today because I believe this issue touches on the foundation of our system of justice. What is the vision reflected in funding decisions for our criminal justice system? Do we view the function of the Department of Corrections as simply incapacitating individuals? Do we view their incarceration as plain punishment? Or do we want a system that at every step works to return people as productive, engaged citizens, improving the quality of life in our communities? Our vision is of a criminal justice system that performs the final option, restoring survivors, offenders, and communities. Our reasoning is simple. We want to prevent future victimization. As survivors, we want to stop what happened to us, murder, rape, assault, theft, and harassment from happening to others. We do not believe that incapacitation or punishment alone will change the direction of someone's life and thus prevent future victimization. As our leaders, you can support this change by funding programs and services for inmates to help them develop skills and tools to be used upon release. so that these, quote, former offenders return to neighborhoods across Oregon, they can make positive impacts on their communities. The base of service provided by the Department of Corrections while people are incarcerated, education, health care, mental health services, and treatment are critical to this vision. We do not want to belabor the point of the value of an education, but if we are truly working on a system that provides skills that can be used in the outside world, it seems obvious that education will be funded in our prisons. From a pragmatic standpoint, funding drug and alcohol treatment will reduce recidivism related to drug and alcohol use. The same argument applies to mental health services. These types of services are critical in the rehabilitation process. We have been to visit a number of programs at the Oregon State Penitentiary. Some of these programs are culturally based, such as the Chicano Culture Club. Some are based on common experience, such as the Veterans Club or the Seventh Step Foundation. All of these programs have elements that are designed to develop positive skills for its members, the majority of whom will return to society at some point. We visit these programs because of the vision I expressed earlier. Preventing future victimization cannot be viewed in isolation or as a function of one part of our justice system. In fact, this tenet should permeate our entire system. You have the power to carry forward this vision in your decision to restore funding to the Department of Corrections. Thank you for your attention. And I would like to add, on a personal note, I was paralyzed by a drunk driver, and there's a direct correlation between the treatment somebody receives while they're in prison and their recidivism outside of prison. And it seems like a very large disconnect for us to cut off any funding for treatment that would prevent what happened to me from happening to somebody else.
Thank you.
My name is Mike Nielsen. I'm a private citizen, an alcoholic, an addict, recovering criminal, 25 years clean and sober and crime-free. I also work as a foster parent for 40 children in the state. I worked in drug and alcohol treatment. I worked for Correction Treatment Services for 3.5 years. And in my role with Correction Treatment Services, I was a 12-step coordinator. I trained volunteers to come in. Usually I only work 6 to 12 hours a week, but I went out in the community and found 12-step volunteers, some that spoke here and will speak here. I trained over 150 of them, 3 years, identified and trained to come into the institutions and work with the inmates that wanted to remain in recovery and with the different 12-step programs. And I know what kind of impact that can have. I know what kind of impact that had on my life, and I know what kind of impact that's had on other people's lives. What I hear here, you know, the emotional impact, the people that have spoke that worked for corrections, the people that have spoke that have been affected by these programs and their life is affected by them. I wonder who we're up against for the money. I'd like to see these other people standing here and what kind of emotional stories they have, you know. I would, you know, suspect that they're all suits, statistics and numbers, and you know they're not bringing the emotions and the appeal, and their life wasn't changed by what they're talking about, you know. But you know, I represent over 150 volunteers that come in on their own time, that come in, you know, that I deal with in the community, and you know, every day. And I don't work here. I haven't worked for over 5 years within the system. I'm a disabled veteran too, but I still work with them in the community and see them, you know, on a regular basis, and I know the importance of it, and that's why I'm down here, as the inmates asked me to come and support them that I work with in the institutions, and there's a lot of them that are in recovery, and the chaplain talked a little about the lifers that are in there. I've got double, triple lifers that were going to meetings in there, and first I thought, why are you going to meetings? You know, you're never going to get out. And they said, well, our life's unmanageable in here. Doesn't matter if we get out, you know. We still drink in here and take drugs and have problems and end up in inmate management and assaulting staff and all the things when they're drunk. And they needed help while they're in the institutions. They need to find another way of life. And that's, you know, that's why I'm here. And that's really important to continue those programs. And really, I know Officer Johnson, who didn't testify here, and one of the lady from the activities, I don't remember. I can't imagine bringing volunteers in without them here to help, to deal with the staff, And when we're dealing with ex-offenders and bringing them in, we have to have someone on the inside to smooth the way. We can't just walk in. Guys have been in prison before, and we have all kinds of problems with staff, I'll tell you, when we walk in the doors and they say, you can't come in because you got an earring, you can't come in because you got the wrong kind of jeans, the wrong kind of clothes, the wrong kind of hair, the wrong kind of look, the wrong kind of shorts. You know, any reason not to let your volunteer in because they're afraid of them. You know? But we need that buffer. We need people that work in corrections that say, no, these are good people, people have been clean for many years that are doing right in the community, that are helping, you know, these inmates. So that's important to me. Thank you for listening.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, ladies and gentlemen, members of the committee, my name is Alf Jorgensen. I'm an independent stockbroker, resident of Oregon for 41 years. I'm here as a volunteer for Narcotics Anonymous. I have some copies. I want to compliment the committee. This is obviously a very important subject, and I compliment you on your obvious attention to this testimony today. I wrote this as an open letter to the Oregon State Legislature in favor of maintaining funding for volunteer services for recovery. Dear honorable members of the Oregon State Legislature, my name is Alf, and I'm a grateful recovering addict. And I'm proud to be a member of the Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous. I have been serving on the Hospitals and Institutions Committee of Portland Area Narcotics Anonymous for most of my 12 plus years in recovery. Most of my service work has been as an NA volunteer in the prison systems of the state of Oregon and in the jails of Multnomah County, Oregon. The purpose of NA is to help each other stay clean by sharing our experience, strength, and hope, especially to the addict who still suffers from the disease of addiction. When I visit a prison, I share my experience with those who cannot, by their incarceration, come to our meetings. Bringing the message of recovery into our jails is important for many reasons. The most important is to help me stay clean. There is an axiom in NA that you can't share what you have unless you're willing to give it away. If I'm to share my experience, strength, and hope with an inmate or any other addict, I must first stay clean myself. Thus, sharing with other addicts is paramount in my personal recovery, and visiting jails and prisons is a large part of that recovery. When I go into a jail as a grateful recovering addict, I convey one absolute of recovery to the inmate addict. And this is what's been shared by everybody else who's been giving testimony. That absolute is hope. If the inmate addict or any other addict has no hope for something better, he will not change. He will be released upon society at some time, and he will repeat the same antisocial, criminal, drug-related behavior that got him arrested previously. I do volunteer work in the jails and prisons to convey hope. Hope for the still suffering addict, hope for me, hope and hope for the rest of society that maybe, just maybe, another addict can change. Doing this volunteer work has helped me immensely, but even more gratifying is to have someone come up to me on the outside and relate to me that he has been helped by hearing me speak in a jail or prison. Having someone acknowledge that his current clean time is related to the sharing of my experience, strength and hope, is what makes volunteer work in jails and prisons so worthwhile. Many of these persons are currently doing service work in Narcotics Anonymous. Ladies and gentlemen of the Oregon Legislature, I appreciate the budget problems that you are experiencing. However, I sincerely hope that you may find the necessary funds to maintain volunteer drug and alcohol recovery programs and meetings within our prison system. As a taxpayer, I share directly in the problems of funding. However, I feel that my tax dollars spent to maintain recovery programs is money well spent. If just one addict in the criminal justice system were to be freed from the bondage of addiction and returned to society as a productive member of that society, the funding would be of high value. When you consider the hundreds of recovering addicts who have heard the message of recovery from volunteers, the benefit of funding those volunteers and their programs seem a most important and well-justified expenditure of public funds. Incarcerated addicts will simply not be exposed to other addicts in the same manner or with the same success as that which has been experienced through volunteer programs. Thank you again for your time and consideration in this matter. I hope that this consideration will provide the necessary funding to allow both myself and others to continue to be volunteers for recovery in the Oregon prison system. So